This episode is sponsored by Meltwater. What could your team do with 20 extra hours? That's how much time agencies that use Meltwater save each month, notes a Forrester study, from teams that span the globe to teams of one. Meltwater gives companies the PR and social media solutions they need to make more informed business decisions faster. Spend less time looking for insights and more time building data-driven campaigns for your clients. Search for meltwater.com to learn more.
We're seeing low levels of public trust in these platforms. And I think that while generative AI tools like MyAI could help boost subscriptions, it could also further erode that already waning trust among the public.
Hey gang, it's Monday, March 20th. Jasmine, Jacob and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Meltwater. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two folks. Let's meet them. We start with our principal analyst who covers everything social media based out of California. It's Jasmine Emberg.
Hi, Marcus. Hey, everyone.
There she is. We're also joined by one of our connectivity and tech briefings analysts, also based out of California. It's Jacob Bourne.
Hey, Marcus. Hey, Jasmine.
Hey, buddy. So today's fact. Jasmine, this is for you.
Yay. You promised me one. I'm so excited.
Okay, here we go. So, well, first of all, we're going to start with a bit of a geography lessons generous explanation. So with the difference between Scandinavia and the Nordics, people kind of use them interchangeably. I've definitely done that in the past. So the Nordic region consists of Denmark, Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Iceland, as well as the Faroe Islands, Greenland, and Åland.
Correct.
Did I say that right? Okay.
Yes.
A tiny collection of islands between Sweden and Finland. Scandinavia is a subset of those countries, including just Norway, Sweden, and Denmark. Right, Jasmine?
Correct. And okay. I also use them interchangeably. So
okay.
You're not alone. I am wrong, though. Yeah.
Like the rest of us. Okay. Some language in the regions can be understandably similar. For example, Swedish and Norwegian are very closely related. Many words are almost identical or at least understandable. However, even though Finland is often lumped in with Scandinavia, which would be wrong, although it is the Nordics, the country's language shares nothing in common with its Scandinavian friends. Finnish is part of the Uralic language family, of which Hungarian or even Estonian are the closest relations. I'm saying that with a question mark because I'm hoping Jasmine can confirm.
You're 100% correct.
Yes! Where's the bell? Quick!
I did not know it was called, did you say Uralic languages?
U-R-A-L-I-C. I may have pronounced that dreadfully wrong.
I've been calling them the Finno-Ugrian languages, but I also could be wrong. But yes, the point is Finnish is completely different than Swedish, Danish, Norwegian, and it's closest to Hungarian and Estonian.
Finally, a fact of the day that's actually accurate. Jasmine is from Finland, which is why we're bringing this up, but she speaks basically every language possible. All right, good. Finally got one right, V. Check us out. Only took 4 years. Anyway, today's real... I said V. V has nothing to do with the fact of the day. So when they're wrong, it's entirely my fault. Today's real topic, what social media chatbots might look like and the arrival already of ChatGPT-4. So folks, in today's episode, we'll first cover what a social media chatbot might look like and what to make of ChatGPT-4's arrival in the lead. Then for In Other News, we'll discuss whether influencers can save VR and how far Alphabet-owned Wing can take drone delivery. How far it can take drone delivery. Pun very much intended. You are welcome. We're off to a bad start. Anyway, we're talking about social media chatbots, what they might look like. We'll start with Snapchat. Snapchat is introducing a chatbot powered by the latest version. I say latest version. I guess it's powered by the old version now, right? Of OpenAI's ChatGPT. So not the 4. Will it automatically get updated to the 4 or that has to be a whole new process, Jacob?
I think that we can be sure that they're going to want to use the latest GPT
upgrade pretty
technology.
Quickly.
Yes.
Okay. When this was announced, I don't think 4 was out. But it will be based on OpenAI's ChatGPT something. probably the latest one. And the Snapchat-powered chatbot is called My AI. Alex Heath of The Verge explains that it will be pinned to the app's chat tab above Conversations with Friends. It will initially only be available to Snapchat Plus subscribers who pay $4 a month. The goal is to make the bot available to all of Snapchat's 750 million worldwide monthly users. Snapchat explains that My AI can recommend birthday ideas, plan hiking trips, suggest recipes, or write poetry. Jasmine, we'll start with you. What's your take on Snapchat's new AI chatbot powered by OpenAI's GPT?
Well, I think it was smart for Snap to roll it out first to Snapchat Plus subscribers. It makes it a little bit more exclusive. It could also make more people want to sign up for Snapchat Plus. But Snap says that it's not meant to be a search engine, and that's kind of a hard sell for me, especially given all the news about Gen Z now using TikTok and Instagram for search, and TikTok even potentially moving into search ads. And I don't think Snap can afford to miss out on that Gen Z trend.
Yeah. I think that they've done a good job of positioning this in the sense of this is a smaller scale and it's focused on fun. Alex Heath of The Verge was saying the design suggests that My AI is meant to be another friend inside of Snapchat for you to hang out with, not a search engine. You can name it, customize the wallpaper for your chat. So that angle I think is interesting. Yeah, will people see it not like a search engine? That might be a bit more difficult. But Jacob, we talked previous episode talking about ChatGPT and generative AI about these more contained use cases and how they might be more beneficial for adoption because you know what you're putting into it as opposed to putting like the entire contents of the internet into this thing. You are knowing what you're putting in to the chatbot. So hopefully you know what you're going to get out of it. And this ChatGPT that's inside Snapchat says it will adhere to the company's trust and safety guidelines, which has got to be a huge plus for both the company and what could come of this and also for people using this. What's your take on Snapchat's new AI chatbot?
I mean, in theory, it's great. I mean, they have this... You know, they're adapting the technology for a specific purpose. Mm-hmm. They said that they, you know, equipped it with safeguards, which is really important given that, you know, there's a young user base for Snapchat. The problem is that the Washington Post actually tested the bot and found, as part of the testing, they role played as if they were teenagers, right? And that they found some pretty disturbing responses from the bot that's not going to fly for, you know, real-time deployment. And basically, you know, the bot offered advice like how to, you know, hide the smell of alcohol on your breath. If your parents were going to delete the app, how you could kind of continue to use it under the radar. And then most disturbingly, the bot apparently gave advice about how a minor can have a relationship with an adult. So some pretty disturbing things. And Snapchat did provide disclaimers that this might happen. I think the problem here is that when it comes to minors using these platforms, you know, even a little slip up, it could pose a huge risk for these companies. So I think it really shows that there's a lot of pressure to adopt generative AI. But for social media especially, I think things could go really wrong pretty quickly, especially when minors are.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, you mentioned Snapchat catering to a younger user base, and so safety, extra important. And Snapchat's tried to get ahead of this, saying harmful and misleading content issues may occur, but still, they're definitely rolling the dice to a certain extent with putting these types of, or this type of artificial intelligence into its product, a product heavily focused on younger, or heavily used by younger folks. Let's move to what Meta's up to in the world of AI. They also added their voice to the chorus of generative AI announcements, noting that they are pulling teams together from across the company to create a new product group focused on building delightful experiences, is what they're calling them, around generative AI. CEO Mark Zuckerberg said, quote, "In the short term, we'll focus on building creative and expressive tools. Over the long term, we'll focus on developing AI personas. We are exploring experiences with text, think chat in WhatsApp and Messenger, and images, think creative Instagram filters and ad formats, and with video and multimodal experiences." Close quote. If you have no idea what I just said, you're not alone. Jacob, what's he talking about? Decipher this for us. What the hell are Meta planning when it comes to AI?
Well, I think the details for how it's going to integrate it into social media is pretty vague so far. We know that Meta overall is making a bit of a pivot from the metaverse focus to generative AI, just in keeping with the industry trend that we're seeing. I think the thing to know is that AI chatbots provide an immense amount of entertainment value. And I think that's something that these social media companies really want to harness for their platforms. I think how it's going to work in, you know, in reality, I think is going to take some fine tuning. I mean, for starters, you know, integrating a chatbot into social media, you know, is basically allowing users to interact with the chatbot. And really, social media at its heart is really about users interacting with each other. So it kind of is a bit of a divergence from that, you know, original purpose of the platforms. I think the other, you know, area that we might see these companies like Meta move in is using the chatbots for content creation itself, which I think could be, you know, a huge time savings, especially for users who have, you know, multiple social media accounts. I think what we might see happen is this focus on automation could initially enhance engagement. But if you think about it, again, social media is really about people interacting with each other. So too much artificial content could also distract from this kind of user engagement in terms of people really wanting to express themselves and hear what others have to say. So I think it's going to be, you know, and it's going to pose some advantages and disadvantages for the platforms.
So one thing I suggested, so testing text-based AI tools on WhatsApp and Messenger. And so they were saying Meta could eventually offer to businesses in areas like sales and customer support, some kind of a ChatGPT styled conversation bot. So you'd be able to communicate with a business or a business's chatbot through something like WhatsApp, a platform that they haven't really monetized at all thus far. Jasmine, what did you make of Meta's plans for generative AI? Very loose plans.
Well, in terms of what you just brought up, incorporating, you know, the chatbots into Messenger and WhatsApp, you know, messaging commerce isn't big here in the US, but it is elsewhere. And a lot of companies that use WhatsApp in particular already have their own chatbots on the app that they use for things like customer service. So I think it could be a really compelling use case. But more broadly speaking, I think it's, you know, impossible to kind of talk about Meta's AI ambitions outside of the context of like the massive layoffs and restructuring that were just announced. And Jacob, you started to allude to this. I think Meta has realized that AI is where the threat and the potential opportunity is right now. It's not backtracking on its metaverse ambitions. It is downplaying them, but it knows it needs to focus on this now to be able to remain competitive and, you know, fix the challenges, the short-term challenges that it has with its business and usage.
So thinking about what Snapchat's doing with their My AI chatbot and then Meta saying that they've got some plans in the works, what could a useful social media chatbot even look like? Is there an example of what one could potentially do that might be pretty useful in the short term?
So following on that WhatsApp trend for businesses, the chatbots that exist right now are pretty basic for the most part. So I think that if Meta could build, or any app could build, a more human-like experience for brands and customers to use, that would also automate some of the community management and customer service workflows, and it wouldn't take away from the social experience, I think that would be, you know, a pretty useful social media chatbot.
Mm-hmm. I mean, building on what Jasmine just said, I think the way that LinkedIn is proposing to use it really, I think, shows a good initial use case for it. And it's basically to help users enhance their social media profiles. I think it's, in a way, right now, what we're seeing is generative AI is coming at an inopportune time for social media in a way. We're seeing low levels of public trust in these platforms. And I think that while generative AI tools like My AI could help boost subscriptions, it could also further erode that already waning trust among the public if it, you know, exacerbates these content moderation issues that people are already concerned about.
Yeah. All right. Final thing we've got to talk about in the lead is ChatGPT-4. So OpenAI's ChatGPT came out about 6 months ago, and there's already an update with OpenAI already announcing ChatGPT's successor, GPT-4. So let's talk about that quickly. What's new? Well, ChatGPT-4 can respond to images, providing recipe suggestions from photos of ingredients. It can write captions and descriptions. It can find available meeting times for 3 schedules. It can take a hand-drawn mock-up of a website and generate code for a functional site in a matter of seconds, notes Shirin Ghaffari of Recode. it can pass a simulated legal bar exam with a score that would put it in the top 10% of test takers. The old GPT scored in the bottom 10%. In a live demo, it generated an answer to a complicated tax query. But there was no real way of checking to see whether the answer or verifying to see whether the answer was correct. The new model processes up to 25,000 words. That's about 8 times as many as ChatGPT, its predecessor. And as the BBC notes, GPT-4 will initially be available to GPT Plus subscribers. They're the folks who pay $20 a month for premium access. Jacob, ChatGPT-4 is already here. What do we think of it?
Well, I think you outlined all the ways in which it's, you know, performs a lot more, a lot better compared to its predecessor, GPT-3.5. I think the other thing to know is that it's new, but we've already kind of been introduced to it, even though we didn't realize it. Microsoft's Bing AI actually runs on GPT-4. So that kind of gives you an indication of how it works and its performance. I think in addition to being more powerful, the image text functionality, I think, is part of the direction where generative AI is going to be going over the next year. We're going to be seeing more of this multimodal functionality where you can use audio, images, video, text, sort of interchangeably and get output based on it. I think the fact that we're seeing GPT-4 release just a matter of months after ChatGPT's initial public debut means that we can expect kind of a rapid fire succession of more advanced AI models to be coming out over the next year and beyond, not just from OpenAI, but from, you know, rivals as well. I think the main thing there is that these models and the updates are very expensive for these companies to produce. I mean, each one costs millions of dollars. And that, you know, that's on top of the millions of dollars it costs to, you know, make it publicly available to users. And the thing is that these tools right now are being provided at relatively affordable costs, which don't necessarily reflect the true cost to, you know, make them and deploy them. So I think the thing for people to know is right now the profitability of companies like OpenAI is still uncertain. And so, you know, these tools are being, you know, launched publicly for users to, you know, gain productivity benefits from. They're potentially remaking entire industries, and they're kind of based on an uncertain economic foundation.
Mm-hmm. Within a month of its release, around 100 million people had used ChatGPT.
Was
obviously the first one. Yes. So we'll see how many people adopt this type of generative AI after this new release. All right, well, that's all we've got time for the lead. Time, of course, for the halftime report. Two takeaways from the first half, one from each. We'll start with Jasmine.
I think we're in a period of a gold rush toward generative AI, right? And it's still very early days, and there's a lot of limitations to a lot of the tools that are out there. And I think there's going to be a lot of trial and error and a lot more iteration before we get to a place where it's a real utility for a lot of people and industries.
Mm-hmm. Jacob?
Yeah. I mean, I think that social media companies at this point should tread pretty lightly in terms of adopting generative AI for their platforms. I think among industries, they face some of the highest risks to potential fallout from its use. And, you know, there's a lot of pressure to adopt it, but I think that, you know, they should make the initial use cases pretty narrow and kind of see how things go.
All right. That's all we've got time for the lead. Time for the second half of the show today in other news. Can VR influencers save the metaverse? And drone delivery company Wing looks to make last mile delivery more efficient. Story one. Can VR influencers save the metaverse? Asks Mimi Swaby of the BBC, because it's not in great shape at the moment. Meta's VR universe Horizon Worlds reported 300,000 users in February of last year, 2022. The Wall Street Journal thinks that number has shrunk. Meta was hoping for 500,000 users of Horizon Worlds by the end of 2022, but it was trending towards 200,000, going in the wrong direction. The Wall Street Journal's report said most users stopped logging back into Horizon after the first month, and only 9% of user-generated worlds, 9% of user-generated worlds are ever visited by over 50 people. The BBC article notes some experts think influencers like Tech Man Ju Tigris X and Thrill could be the key to boosting the metaverse's profile, but Jasmine, can virtual reality influencers save the metaverse?
No.
Okay, moving on. Story two.
No. Well, no one can save the metaverse because it doesn't exist yet. I think, you know, the better question and what this article is actually really talking about is whether influencers can get people and their audiences excited about and on board with the idea of the metaverse. And the answer to that question is yes, to an extent, because audiences follow their favorite creators wherever they go, and creators can sway their perception of different topics, businesses, platforms, products, you name it. Mm-hmm. But there's still a lot of hurdles, even if you get influencers on board with, you know, the metaverse and they get their audiences on board with it. And those are things like device adoption and the optics of it being so closely tied to Meta, though I think that's kind of unfair to both parties.
Mm-hmm. Story two. Alphabet-owned drone delivery company Wing looks to make last-mile delivery more efficient, writes Insider Intelligence's senior retail analyst Zach Stambor. He notes that Wing expects to handle millions of deliveries for millions of people at a lower cost per delivery than ground transport by mid-2024, according to Wing's CEO. How? Well, by acting like an efficient data network, not a traditional transport system. Zach explains that Wing drones will pick up, drop off, travel, and charge in whatever pattern makes the most sense for the whole system. Think ride sharing and how the cars move about to meet different retailers and restaurants' peaks in demand across cities. The most interesting sentence, Jacob, in this article is what and why.
So the heart of the news here is that Wing is developing its Wing delivery network to function, quote, more like an efficient data network than a traditional transportation system, end quote. So I think on its face, I mean, this seems like a really great approach. I mean, you have the efficiency that's going to allow the drone delivery surface to scale. And in scaling, that's what's going to make it economically viable. Now, the thing to remember here is that these traditional transportation systems that it's kind of comparing its approach to have decades of experience dealing with the kind of chaotic real-world issues that delivery services have to face. And one of the things, and of course, those challenges have not a lot to do with algorithmic efficiency. So I think one of the things that these drone delivery services are really going to face is, number one, an extremely tightly controlled air regulation. So basically, the U.S. Aerospace regulation that is going to pretty much limit how far and to what extent these drones can travel. There's issues like drones potentially colliding with power lines and starting fires. There's issues of privacy, you know, drones flying overhead people's properties, for example. You know, while, you know, algorithmic efficiency is valuable, it doesn't necessarily get to the heart of those problems. And I think those are the problems that the Wing delivery networks is really going to have to tackle in order to make it viable.
Yeah, well, the thing that jumped out to me, drones will pick up, drop off, and then it continues travel, charge, etc. I hadn't really thought much about the returns potential. No. So I think that's pretty fascinating. You go into your backyard, drone comes down, you give it the thing, and off it goes, potentially at least. We expect, our forecasting team expect there to be 60,000 drone delivery units in the US this year and nearly double that next year, 110,000. That's all we've got time for this episode. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Jasmine.
Thank you, Marcus. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you to Jacob.
Thanks, Marcus.
Thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, Stuart, who runs the team. And thanks to everyone listening in. We'll see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Meltwater.